So what I'm going to talk today about is some of the background research that we conducted at Child Trends to develop a measure of women's prospective pregnancy intentions, building on that other session. And the focus of this was to develop a measure that could be used by Title X family planning providers for their family planning annual report. So unlike some of the previous papers that focused on multiple measures of intentions, our real goal was to come up with a single measure that could be used in an electronic health record format. I'd like to thank my co-authors at Child Trends, including Lena Guzman, who is here today and can help answer questions, and our funders at the Office of Population Affairs. I don't have any disclosures. And so why ask about pregnancy intentions? So there are several theories that operate and program approaches that operate under the hypothesis that intentions help shape behaviors. And what we highlight here is that providers can play a key role in helping women and men line up their pregnancy intentions with their contraceptive behaviors. This is also a key priority for Title X, which funds federally funded family planning clinics. It ensures that intentions become part of the discussion or conversation with providers about method choice, and will allow OPA ultimately to track women's intentions and to line those up with specific contraceptive methods. So we took a three-prong approach to developing a measure of pregnancy intentions, starting with a scan of existing measures, but we don't have time to really go into that today. But we also conducted key informant interviews with providers and then developed and cognitively tested questions with providers and with potential clients. So the overall purpose of the key informant interviews was to help us narrow down a question. But we gathered information about what does a typical family planning visit look like, whether and how information about pregnancy intentions is collected, and whether this informs contraceptive counseling across clinics. And we interviewed 79 providers at a variety of clinics and locations that worked with clients with various backgrounds. So we found that providers said that a typical family planning visit generally included four components, starting with intake forms, then health interview and labs, birth control counseling, and birth control prescription and referrals. And questions about intentions were often included across all of these different components of a typical visit, either explicitly or often implicitly. And the providers generally asked about pregnancy intentions up to three times during a typical family planning visit. They also asked about intentions at a pregnancy test visit, but they were less likely to ask about intentions when a woman came in for an STI visit, for a contraceptive refill visit, or if they came in for emergency contraception. So these are potential missed opportunities to have conversations with women about their intentions and their contraceptive choices. We found that providers asked about intentions in a variety of ways. Several of them asked, do you want to get pregnant now or in some type of time frame, the next year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years? And then the other providers, largely those that worked with younger clients, flipped this question and asked, how important is it to you to avoid a pregnancy right now? They ask the question in a variety of ways and a variety of time periods during a pregnancy visit, a family planning visit. So this is an example of an intake form, and they ask a fairly simple question of intentions. Are you planning on having children in the future? Yes, no, or at what age? And this is an example of a much broader set of questions that was asked during a contraceptive counseling session with questions about a reproductive life plan. So they started with, do you want to have children? When do you want to have them? Some information about spacing. And they go on through to ask, you know, what can I do to help you with your plan? What information can I share with you to promote a healthy pregnancy? We also asked about birth control counseling and found that providers generally say they do not recommend specific methods. Instead, they give women information about methods and let them choose which methods. But having said that, they do tend to use a hierarchical approach to the types of information they provide, starting with information about the most effective method and then moving down the list to less effective methods. And they did say, many did say that women's pregnancy intentions influenced or informed the types of information that they provided. So, for example, if someone said they were ready to get pregnant in the next year, they're more likely to give them detailed information on preconception counseling. However, if somebody wanted to delay childbearing for several years, they were more likely to give them more detailed information about long-acting reversible contraceptive methods. Even though we screened providers on those that said they asked about pregnancy intentions, and they largely did ask about them, some of the providers did not ask about intentions during a family planning visit. And this lists some of the reasons why. Some said they included it on the intake form, but they didn't have time to have a conversation about intentions. Some said that if a woman came in for birth control, that implied that the women did not want to get pregnant, so why have a conversation? Some did not want to encourage teens to think about having children, so they didn't ask them about pregnancy intentions. They only asked about older women. Others didn't think intentions were a good predictor of behaviors, and some just said they simply did not have time to cover intentions in a family planning visit. At the end of each of our key informant interviews with the providers, we asked them to give us an ideal question. What one question would you have, if you had to ask one question about fertility intentions, what would you ask? And so, as you see here, we had three types of questions that came out. The first was open-ended questions with a time frame and some type of response option. So, when would you like to have your next baby? When, if ever, would you like to be pregnant? Do you want a pregnancy in the future? If so, how soon? The second category was those pregnancy avoidance questions. Again, how important is it to you to avoid a pregnancy right now? And the third category were some teen-specific questions where they gave them a broader time period. Do you want to get pregnant sometime in the next 5 years? So based on the key informant interviews and our measure scan, we came up with some measures. We included measures based on the information we gathered that included information about whether a woman wanted to get pregnant and some type of time frame for pregnancy. And we conducted three iterative rounds of cognitive testing, and these cognitive tests were conducted both with providers and with women to get both of their perspectives. So the purpose of the cognitive interviews was to test whether measures worked as intended with the target audiences, and it reveals whether an item is appropriate, the wording is clear and easily understood by respondents, whether respondents have information needed to answer the questions and to fit into the response categories that are available. And this was the first question that we asked in round one of cognitive interviews. So the blue at the top was the prompt that we asked. I'd like to ask you about your plans for having more children. Do you think you will want to get pregnant again sometime in the future, and if so, when? And we had three categories of response options. At the top, does not want to get pregnant in the future. The second category, they're not sure whether they want to get pregnant. And the third, they want to get pregnant, and there's several response options there. And we started out with several response categories with the idea that we could narrow them down over the course of cognitive interviewing. And also important was we had three types of unsure options, the first being unsure whether she wants to get pregnant, and the other being she wants to get pregnant sometime soon, but she's not sure when she would like to get pregnant. And we found that both providers and the women that we interviewed felt that both of these categories of unsure were important to have. So this is a quote from a provider saying, "I would add the undecided box. The younger they are, the more likely they are to say that they like to get pregnant sometime, but way in the future, I don't know when." And then some people would say they don't know if they want to get pregnant, so there are different answers. And so then we conducted two more rounds of cognitive interviews, but I know that we're short on time here, so we're going to jump to the final question. And this is a streamlined question. The prompt is now, do you want to get pregnant? Because we did receive some feedback about, you know, not everyone feels comfortable with plan to get pregnant. So do you want to get pregnant again sometime in the future? And if so, when? And then we have six response categories with the never, they want to get pregnant, and there's three response categories, and the two unsure categories. And we found that it was a fairly simple, streamlined question. It had the types of response categories that both women and providers were able to map responses onto. It gave the providers enough detail to influence their contraceptive counseling, including women at the one end who are trying to get pregnant, women at the other who want to avoid pregnancy for several years, and people in between. And then it worked pretty well across women with a variety of backgrounds, race, ethnicity, age, and parity. So thanks so much. We hope you'll go to Child Trends website for information on this and other research we conduct.
Providers, and there are a variety of providers across the country, and they have various testing in stockpiles for the types of contraceptive methods that they had available, and some of them would differentiate whether or not they felt like a long-acting method was appropriate based on whether somebody wanted to avoid pregnancy for a longer period of time. So we did hear people specifically say if somebody only wants to avoid for a year, and they're thinking, and they might even get that pregnancy after that, then we're less likely to give them a long-acting method when we only have like a small number of these methods available, and we can stockpile a ton of Depo or birth control pills. Now, there might be changes happening. Like we have this generic version of an IUD coming out that might make things more affordable to have people on long-acting methods, but they did differentiate. And it often differed across providers and the level of resources they have, but they would differentiate to some extent the type of method that they would use. Or not recommend, because they don't want to say they recommend it, but that they would provide some detailed information about.
And You know, I just, the challenge here is that a lot of these young people are, you know, seeking and receiving care in the context of a subspecialty service, and their providers are not well equipped nor willing to have those kinds of conversations. And so the model that we've employed at Children's is really to provide adjunct primary, adolescent primary care to a lot of these young people. So they receive care now, many of them in their subspecialty clinics as well as the adolescent medicine clinic, and men are, or young men are very involved in a variety of reproductive and other kind of health-related issues. But you're right, it's a great opportunity.
I'm thinking about Amanda in the room? No, so Amanda Dennis's new work, her whole website, Women with NERV, which is looking at what young women with epilepsy need around sexual and reproductive health, and I'm wondering if you're thinking, rather than trying to get physicians to change their behavior, which is almost impossible, whether or not the hospital might think about other modalities for meeting the sexual and reproductive health needs of people with chronic conditions.
Well, like I said, this adolescent, you know, we call it a transition clinic, is really designed to do that. And we also, one of the things that's, again, an opportunity that in many ways is not really being taken advantage of is that, our, at least in California, these young people are eligible for California Children's Services, which is a wraparound comprehensive care that's supported regardless of insurance status. And so the provider team isn't just the doctor. You know, they have social workers, they have case managers, they have others who could be trained, you know, and could be sort of, you know, they sort of enhance the work, you know, the care that they receive in, even in the subspecialty services to address that.
Right, but I think that, I don't want to speak for Amanda because she's not here, but what Amanda found was they also wanted to talk to each other.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
They
wanted
to know how other people were managing.
Yeah, no, and we do, and that's a part of our adolescent clinic is getting people together with them. Because a lot of these kids, even though they've been going to these clinics since birth in some cases, they're in the waiting room, and when you ask them, have you talked to anybody else who, you know, is kind of living with the same kind of condition? No. You know, there aren't mechanisms where there should be for that kind of cross-talk. But we also want to make sure that they have good information, because managing sort of reproductive health decisions is complicated for some of these kids. You know, I'm not so as familiar with epilepsy, but certainly congenital heart disease and, you know, and trans, you know, kids are on anti-inflammatories and people who have rheumatologic disorders. I mean, all of those, you know, they're what contraceptive technology you use, how you undergo a pregnancy, if you plan to, you know, go through a pregnancy, how you manage your medication, your anti-rejection medication. All of that really does require kind of expert kind of negotiation and discussions. And we're moving in that direction where there are these kind of, you know, powwows that we were having with our adolescent medicine primary care specialists with the subspecialists, so that these decisions can be safe and